He's got the knowledge.
Because once again, I have to come on air and talk about how right I am once again in anything that it comes to sports.
He's got the questions.
I'm going to lose it. Are you kidding me? What are we doing here?
He's got the guests.
20th head coach in Fresno State history here, Matt. Is it hard to believe sometimes still the 20th head coach here in program history?
It's all moved really quickly here over the course of the last 5-6 weeks. But super excited to be here.
Phil Bonatti is the voice for the Central Valley sports leader. Behind the Bench starts now. Brought to you by Helena Agri.
That is right. Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader, here on this Monday afternoon. Monday, October 27th. It's spooky week. It's Halloween week, folks. Hope we're not getting the Monday scaries here for how we are progressing in our local sports scene. We'll talk about the terrifying nightmare that was Saturday in a little bit here, but I just want to say hello and how are we doing on this wonderful Monday. Hope everyone's doing well. Overcast Monday here in the Central Valley, listening here on 1430. Big thanks to Tony D for tossing it to us in the previous hour. Tony D Show, the Sportsline Bulldog Hour. Tony D from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. on the weekdays here on 1430. You can listen to him live and on demand on those wonderful platforms that we have. ESPN Fresno app. You also have the ESPN. You got the 1430 ESPNFresno.com website. So that's where you reach us. That's where you listen to all of our programming. Sportsline Bulldog, Tony D, my show, Behind the Bench, and also the Central Valley Sports Report live with Paul Metters from 10 a.m. to noon on 1430 on Saturdays. So good to be here. Like I said, we're getting off and running here on this show. We're also live streaming on the ESPN Fresno platforms, which are, of course, you can find us on Facebook, Twitch, and YouTube, where you can find us right now, currently live streaming for the next couple of hours as we go to 5 o'clock before Monday Night Football makes its glorious return, as it does always every weekly Monday side of things. We've got the Commanders and the Chiefs on a weekly basis. It's going to be exciting, and can't wait to see how this one will play out. I think some people have an idea, but we'll see. The National Football League is never set in stone in what results we are going to see. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Outside of that, though, should be a lot of fun. 2 hours, we're going to dissect it all for you here on 1430 ESPN. If you want to get in on the conversation, of course, you contact us at the Lee's Air Hotline, 559-320-1430. I'm sure we got a lot of thoughts about that Fresno State football game on Saturday. Got a lot of things to get off your chest, I would imagine, with how this program has performed so far here in 2025. And it's Boise week, folks. It doesn't get any easier. It's Boise State week. Lee's Air Plumbing, Heating, and Roofing sponsoring the Lee's Air Hotline for you there. Lee's Air also sponsors the Weather Check. And taking a look at the weather today, like I said, a little overcast. It's been mostly overcast for the day today. I see temperature right at 69 degrees, and that will be our high for today, a 69-degree day. We'll get warmer as the week progresses. Looks like we're going to get sunny and warmer into the 80s by midweek, and we're hovering around there all the way through the weekend, folks. So high 70s to low 80s is where we're going to be sitting around, 50-degree temperatures overnight. Could be dipping back into the 70s by next week at this time. So should be just pleasant. Pleasant temperatures around this time of year. It is, folks, you live in California. It's fantastic. It's fantastic. I looked at the temperature of some places I used to live. We're getting already down to the 40s and some potential freezing rain situations overnight. So, folks, we got it nice. We got it nice. Before I get into anything about our show, of course, we're going to be talking about World Series. We're going to talk about the NFL. We're going to talk about Fresno State, like I said. Talking all things, including one of our good guests today. We're going to bring in CJ Haydock, who is the coach of FPU men's basketball. He'll be joining us at around 4:15 today. We'll talk about the FPU basketball season coming up. So looking forward to what we're going to see there. Heard they're a veteran squad, returning a lot. Legitimately could be a fantastic opportunity of a season coming in for this team. So excited for that. looking forward to that conversation and looking forward to getting into the show. But first, I got to say what's up and ask the question that I always have on my mind on these Mondays. Producer Jorge is in. Jorge, how was your weekend?
Hey there, Phil. What can I say? It was an up and down weekend.
Rough weekend for your sports, fandoms.
Sports-wise, it was rough.
Rough but weekend. Saturday was a punch in the gut, and then Sunday was a little kick in the nuts.
Kick in the shin. I wouldn't say that.
Kick in the shin.
Okay. You know, it's painful, but it's not that bad. Saturday, we had a little problem here, so I had to come here early in the morning and help out Paul a little bit. And then went and helped my friend move, which was not bad. I was dreading it too much. You know, I was making too much of it. And I think in my head I was thinking, but I actually had fun and it was cool seeing his new house. And it was nice helping somebody else.
I was, of course, we get home after the Friday night game, which was a long one. I'm just going to put it plainly. It was a long Friday Night Lights game for us.
Yeah,
I think. I don't know how late you got home. I got home at around like 11:30 last night.
Yeah, pretty rough. Time.
And I knew, and I was dreading. And I don't know if you ever get this feeling when you know you have to wake up early the next morning. You just cannot like sleep. You just can't. You're just like dreading the lack of sleep that it continues to compound on itself, and then you just can't sleep. And that's me. I couldn't sleep. And I woke up about like at 6 a.m. for the Fresno State game. I remember what the feeling was. It was dark. My alarm went off. I had to get up. The reason I had to get up early is, of course, it's no secret. I've made a mention of this before. I was in the Fresno State marching band for 4 years when I was in Fresno State. So I have a colored history with them. And during homecoming, they always bring back the alumni. It's the one time I get back on the horn and start playing, right? And due to the 12:30 kickoff nature of everything, the rehearsal had to happen early in the morning. We're talking, I had to be at campus at around 7:30 a.m. I also regrettably, I'm a good friend. I'm not regretting anything, but I may have questioned my choices in order to say, hey, yeah, I am going to pick up some Einstein bagels for some people that I knew beforehand. I became the bagel runner that morning and added a little bit more stress to the morning to make sure I got back there in time. But outside of that, I did get to the music building. I was feeling, I was feeling the way I was feeling. And you know what? I had a great lead up to the game. I'll tell you that. And I'm sure a lot of people had a great lead up to the game. And I think that's my fondest memory of Saturday. Of course, then the game kicked off. And, ironically, I don't know if anybody else saw it in the stadium. You weren't there, of course, Jorge. You were helping your friend move. One of the funny things about that game was at the kickoff, the scoreboard was messed up. It had 3-0 Bulldogs already to start the game. And I was like, oh, we're already off to a great start. You know, and it was stuck at 3-0 with 15 minutes to go for about 4 minutes of the quarter, the opening quarter. And I was like, all right. Good vibes, right? Good vibes. Well, unfortunately, Bulldogs did not score the 3 phantom points they did. They didn't even score any points, and it's the first shutout in Bulldog history at Bulldog Stadium.
I got to see the most of the second half.
You didn't miss much.
I did not. We finished up, and the second half was going on. We went to grab something to eat and then take it back home. Mm-hmm. And when I was home, I didn't have a FS1, so I did what I always do and, search for a stream somewhere.
You get resourceful.
Yeah.
You know.
And then I was watching it, and I was, I was disappointed as everybody. But something weird happened at the end of the stream where the stream just go in. Like, as soon as San Diego State scored the
pick six with about 3 minutes to go.
Yeah. The stream people just decided to shut it down.
That's fair.
Shut it down and go to a different game.
The juice isn't worth the squeeze, Jorge.
I was like, what? I still want to watch.
You didn't want to watch much more of it. I don't leave games early. I left the game at 3, about 3:30 left to go. I just felt, yeah, it's kind of time. And apparently it was the right move. I heard this from my parents. They were stuck waiting at the bottom of the ramp because San Diego State wanted to celebrate all over the field with that oil can. And it took forever for all the San Diego State team to get up the ramp and head out of our stadium. They really soaked in the victory of taking home the oil can.
Yeah, that's what's up with the stadium. You need to wait for the players to move, and it just,
got home at around 4:45, you know. I figured bringing in a trombone for the post-game presser wasn't the best move. I thought I'd do it if we won. I was not going to do it if we lost. I think the absurd image of me, you know, walking in with a Getson wasn't the most ideal thing for the mood of the day.
It could have been the, you know.
Yeah. That's what Jackson Moore was joking with me about today when I told him that's that predicament. And I was like, you know what? I'm not that much. If I had 20 years in covering this team, maybe. I'm only on year two right now, and I, you know, gotta get a better rapport with the crew there. What do we got to say about the game, though? I mean, clearly it wasn't what we wanted. Clearly, I think that's evident from the result, evident from the mood, evident from anything you could watch in terms of our two eyes about that that game on Saturday. I mean, historically inept offense, and it came to the play on the field. I mean, the tail of the tape is first shutout Bulldog Stadium. We've seen some bad teams at that stadium, Jorge. I'm shocked that's a statistic, by the way.
But there's always like a field goal or
somebody gets something there.
A late touchdown that the other team gives up, and I don't understand. I really don't understand.
San Diego State at 21 first down. Hey, do we want to go positives or do we want to go negatives? Where do we want to go?
It's Monday. Let's go positive, man.
I got like 1.5 positives for you.
Let's go.
Defense. I thought the defense played well. The defense forced turnovers. I thought the defense was staying consistent in its play. It had like one, I think, like bad drive, which ended up having San Diego State cap it up with a 1-yard touchdown run. But outside of that, forcing field goals, forcing San Diego State to at least just be at arm's length in this game.
The Bulldogs were in the game until the fourth quarter, so that has to say something about the defense.
One interception for the Bulldogs, one fumble forced and lost, so that's two turnovers on the game. What it tells me is that Colorado State was the apparition in terms of the defensive performance. And I will say there's tough news on the forefront of this is, I don't know if you heard, but Kavion Thunderbird is out for the rest of the year. That was revealed today in the press conference from Coach Entz. He has a broken bone in his arm in some form or fashion. That's what was described to us. I don't know if I qualify that as broken, as a broken arm, but that is what it was described to us as. But yeah, the Bulldogs in terms of 23 rushes for 45 yards, not it. 20 completions for 182 out of 42 attempts, not it. Where were we in the penalty department? Hey, you know what? We cut the penalties by more than half. Six penalties for 50 yards. I wouldn't kill them on that side of things. It just sometimes it's not about the quarterback. Sometimes it is. I was shocked to hear Conklin was starting in terms of it. Now, hold on. Let me revise this. I was shocked, but I wasn't surprised based off of, remember, we were talking about it all week. We were like, I was convinced Entz was starting to lose faith in Warner, right? And I was pointing out to the quotes from the press conference. And at that time, he told us, obviously, that Warner was the starting quarterback Monday, but I get a sense that he really was making that decision that day in terms of it. And he revealed at some point in the bye week, it was decided that Conklin was the starting quarterback, regardless of where it was. It just didn't feel like anybody was prepared for that to be the reality into Saturday's game. And I don't know exactly what has been behind the closed doors in terms of that preparation, but obviously Half of it to me is when you play San Diego State, who has the best defense in the Mountain West, that is a hard team to get ready to go at, and what they do and what they present. But the other flip side of it is you have talent over the field that supposedly is capable of making plays, and it didn't help that there were critical drops from the wide receiver standpoint. I don't have a wide receiver drop statistic, but I got to imagine it's got to be equally as frustrating. Bulldogs couldn't get in any rhythm whatsoever. Conklin started seeing ghosts. He started rolling out. He started losing accuracy when he was rolling out. Like, we've seen numerous balls being thrown out of bounds, well out of bounds, out of ranges of guys in the tail end of the game. And it just became a desperation attempt to try to stay in it. And obviously, you start taking chances, and then you're going to get a pick six to basically close out the football game there. And you don't have to tell those guys they're frustrated, right? And don't have to tell anybody in the building that they're frustrated what's going on. I can only imagine how maddening it is, especially when you feel great about how your team's prepared all week. And Coach Entz has talked about and raved about how they practice. And he is, I get a sense of he is perplexed at how Saturday just showed the players have showed up, and the players have arrived, but they have not shown up in their ability to play football on the Saturday or the game day or whatever it is. And I don't know what the quick fix is in that, and I don't know what the talk of the conversation is about it, but Coach Entz has revealed he's really talking to a lot of the players on this team and trying to diagnose and figure it out. And there's been candid conversations. Just talking about the way you need to bounce back in a game from a game like this. Here's what Coach Entz had to say about it.
You have to learn from it. Try to figure out why. Why was there hesitation? Why was there just the inability to execute consistently, in all three phases for the entire game? What's holding us back? Is it fear of failure? I don't know. There's a million things, and had a great conversation with some of our vets yesterday. They expressed some thoughts, which was good that we have candid conversation or constructive conversation with our coaches. I just say we got to continue to demand and hold them and lean into the why we got here. I mean, there was a we were able to put some wins together this year. Maybe it wasn't always the prettiest, but we were finding ways to win. And so let's continue to lean on doing the little things right. Being fundamentally sound, and if we got to simplify, let's do it. But let's make sure we get out there and we can play fast, we can execute, and let's have some fun doing this as well. I think coming in and this morning, browbeating our players, they were frustrated enough. I think sometimes after the fact, there's two prices you pay. You pay either to prepare, or you pay price of regret. And I don't think any of us want to pay that price.
From my indication, there's sometimes a paralysis by analysis, and he talked about maybe simplifying some things moving forward into it. There's two things that can be true about this Bulldogs team. Maybe it is quite simply the team needs to get back to its basics. It needs to get back to playing the football that it said it needs to play in terms of just going after some opponents and not having to worry about all the different things that are going on. Maybe these players do need to just play free and not fear. And it's a hard thing to do when you have two straight games like this and you start letting doubt creep into your head of like, am I really doing the thing I need to do on this field? Am I actually making the right play? You second guess that and you're dead in this game, right? And I fear that that's been creeping into some of these players. And after the last two performances, you'd hope it changes, but this is a tough opponent to go into with Boise State. And Jorge, I don't know what quick fix there is to make this happen other than to completely overhaul the idea of how this team approaches this game, which is it's 0-0. Your record is 0-0 this week, and just go out and play football. Do what you've done to warrant you being a D1 football player here at this program.
Yeah. Excuse me. It's hard for players to come up and after winning, you have time to prepare for this game. You have a lot of time to prepare for this.
They had so much time. That's probably the most frustrating.
Come out like that and especially the offensive players. I mean, I feel like defensive players did their job.
Yeah.
I feel like they were there. They and just the offense wasn't there at all.
And it hasn't. In four straight games now.
And I wonder why just, you know, if you went half a game with the quarterback that wasn't working at all, why not go back to EJ?
Well, it's too late now. EJ's, I don't know. I don't know how you go back to EJ.
He was working before.
Was he? People were calling for his head.
At least he was scoring touchdowns.
I don't want people to do the revisit this history thing. People wanted EJ out. People wanted EJ out after 5-2.
I get it, but is there somebody else better than?
If there was somebody else better, Jorge, they'd be playing right now. And clearly they think Conklin's better. That's their opinion. The evidence isn't there right now from the last game, but the kid's got to have confidence coming out. And what a hell of a time to start your career in Fresno State than San Diego State and Boise. I don't know if I thought this was the spot to try to change things up, but felt like, you know, I'm not trying to second guess the decision. The coach knows what he sees, and the coach knows what's going on.
And I think also, I think this is something where Ants is learning, and I've been saying this the whole time, you know, the whole season about him being, you know, first-time coach and the D1, and maybe he's, you know, this is something new to him. Maybe he has had this type of things happen to him.
Yeah.
And you know, he was always at a place where there was talent. And the talent.
The relative talent.
Yeah.
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 They were the big boys.
They were, the, you know.
Yeah.
In this small pond, but at the same time, like, you come here and it's not the same, so you have to adjust your ways. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
Well, what I know is the Bulldogs cannot go back to EJ now. They're stuck with Carson unless there's an injury. Because once you go back, like, if you go back to EJ, then I don't know what confidence that gives you as a coach to tell your team, I know what I'm doing out there. Like, you got to be sure in what you're doing to know what to lead a group of young players that are impressionable and need to understand that you have a plan moving forward. And I'm sure there's been a lot of candid conversation in the room of, like, the turnovers are just simply not acceptable and where they are. Now, obviously nothing's changed from there was how many more turnovers in this game? Three more. Do I got that right? Two more, two interceptions. I don't know. There's clearly, I don't think there's a quick fix. I think this Saturday's game is going to be really rough. You are what you put on the tape. And I said this before, Jorge, if you're a team that turns the ball over, you're just quite simply a team that turns the ball over. You can't just change your shape and be somebody different that you haven't shown. And now 8 weeks of football. So, but maybe something can come differently from this. You just gotta combat the doubt as a player on this football team. Combat the doubt that is going to creep into this team now that you've had two objectively bad games in a row. So, got to keep the faith, though. You got to. That's the only way. Sky's not falling. 5-3, Jorge. We'd be in a lot worse places before, right?
Yep.
5-3 is...
I remember those the Rooter years where it was 0-something.
I know.
And then, yeah.
Never forget the end of, I want to say 2016, rainstorm against San Jose. And I think it was just as sad a state of affairs as I've ever seen at a Fresno State game. So, all right, Jorge, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to do Who's Been Naughty from the Weekend, Who's Been Nice from the Weekend in the NFL. Stay with us. We're just getting started here on 1430 ESPN.
Eerie sight, for my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
oh yeah, we're getting back into the festive move here, Jorge. We're getting festive. Halloween vibes.
It's the week. It's the week of Halloween.
So. What's your costume? You got a costume idea? Well, I guess you're going to be here.
Yes, I am. I'm not really going anywhere.
You're dressed as a producer.
We're planning something on the first, so okay, maybe.
Yeah, radio producer for you there. I'm going to wear my play-by-play guy costume on Halloween night.
It's going to be just me with glasses.
Oh, Paul brings some candy. We got to talk about it. Maybe one of the rejoins, Jorge, you can play some Halloween music on the broadcast Friday. Friday Lights, by the way, will be Clovis and Clovis West at La Monica to close out the year. Will be fun. 7 p.m. kickoff, 6:30 pregame for that one. All right, Jorge, we got a Who's Benatti, Who's Benatti. Where did my sheet go? I lost my sheet somewhere. I don't know where it is. Anyways, I have a copy of it in front of me here anyway, so we should be okay. The Who's Been Naughty, Who's Been Nice of the week. I usually go through the NFL week and figure out who has been naughty and who's been nice from my week. And Jorge, where do you want to start, nice or naughty?
Let's go with nice.
Nice? How about Justin Fields getting my first nice of the weekend here? Let me see if I can play a little applause effect there. There we go. Nope. There you go. Little clapping for Justin Fields in terms of it. Justin Fields, big time comeback. How about getting his first win ever when the team scores 21 points or more against him? The Bengals scored 38, and Justin Fields finally wins a shootout. Congrats to them. They get their first win of the year. Even I, as a person who has a cold heart to the New York Jets, extend my appreciation to them. But more specifically, Justin Fields, who was surprisingly extremely vulnerable at the end of his game. Did you hear his post-game press conference quotes, Jorge?
Yeah, I heard a little bit about it.
Talking about how he was sitting in a closet crying because he was playing for the New York Jets. Not because he was playing.
Because they won.
No, because the Jets were so it's been an emotional toll for him this season, yeah. Midweek. Jorge, that's what happens when you play for the Jets, right?
So, if you haven't won 7 games, yeah. I mean, anything positive is good. Anything at all.
Any of that positive.
A win is, you never want to go 0-8 on a season.
No, of course not. You want to get that win before November. Yeah. The first win before November. The 15-point deficit, second largest the Jets have overcome in the fourth quarter to win in franchise history after a 23-point comeback against the Dolphins. People know that as the Monday Night Miracle. Good win. Horrible loss for the Bengals.
Yeah. When I saw it, I thought the Bengals had it, and I thought it was over.
By the way, I'm eliminated from the eliminator pool I picked the Falcons to beat the Dolphins. And
ouch.
Yeah. But I take solace in this, Jorge. My other game I was thinking about, I was going to pick the Bengals over the Jets. So if either way, I was done. So, regardless, whatever. It's over. Week 8. I made it pretty far. Jorge, who's Benatti? Let's go to Who's Benatti next. Gonna roast Juwan Jennings. Maybe specifically for that deep ball to him that he just absolutely, canned it.
He had it in his hands and then he didn't.
Who's that? Who's the player that dropped the interception in the 21 NFC Championship for the? For the Niners.
Defender. What's the cornerback?
Yeah. I'm trying to remember. What was his name?
He's no longer with the team, but...
I know he's not. can we get it? Come on. Can I get it here next in terms of it?
You know, the funny thing about Jennings is that later on he made a crucial catch at the 1-yard line.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, why... That one was harder than the one that he dropped.
Yeah.
I just don't understand.
Jaquiski Tartt. Dropping that pick in the 2021 NFC Championship. Kid was never the same. Never the same. Rough moment. Juwan Jennings also starting to get a little bit of an attitude with his injury situation, with the contract situation.
He feels a certain way, and you know the team feels a certain different way.
I don't put it a non-zero chance he's traded from the Niners.
I can see that.
I don't put it a non-zero chance that like he's not on the Niners after next week.
They let Debo go because they knew that Juwan was going to be there.
Yeah,
he had already signed an extension.
But I think their hope is Pearsall gets healthy. Ayuk gets healthy. You're kind of liking what you get from Kendrick Bourne. You like what you have with Kittle. McCaffrey's your leading receiver. You know, like, is Juwan really necessary? And all he's done for the last few weeks for me, Jorge, is just show he's a liability on the field as opposed to a...
I don't know about that.
He's been a liability.
I don't know about that. I mean, he's caught some balls. So...
The bare minimum of his job, yes, he has...
That one catch.
Where four catches for 45 yards, Jorge, is just not number.
How many times did they go to him?
Four times. Yeah.
And he had four catches.
Need him a lot more. I don't know. Let's be fair. The Niner offense stunk on Sunday.
Yeah. That was the whole. They couldn't run the ball. They couldn't.
Yeah.
It felt like. Well, we'll talk about it later.
Yeah, we'll talk about it later. Let's get to who's been nice. Let me give the kudos to how about the Denver Broncos? Just first team to really shut down the Dallas Cowboys offense this year. And the Broncos, are they a quiet 6-2? I feel like people don't really realize how good their record is. Quiet 6-2 right now. Game and a half up on the Chiefs right now in the AFC West. And despite, you know, the shakiness of their team, they have now ripped off, I would say, a streak of wins here that have been impressive in terms of their comeback ability and also in terms of the caliber of opponent they've beaten. So I think the Broncos, I would say, are climbing the power rankings for sure in terms of the way they're playing. And I got to admit, it's interesting to see the development here for Denver in terms of what they're becoming as a team. I do believe... they're going to be a force to be reckoned with, and people knew this going in. Do you trust Bo Nix? That's the number one question. Do you still trust him to lead your team into a potential run at an AFC Championship / Super Bowl opportunity? We'll see. But, you know, putting it to the Cowboys, that was as dominant of an effort as we've seen.
Definitely the Cowboys are regretting not hiring Sean Payton. At a certain time, he's
gonna let McCarthy go a little year early and went with that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he used to be a Cowboys coach, so
yeah,
he knows the you know the front office very well. And I don't know. I just feel like he's really been on fire. I think last year there were certain things he didn't do, and things that were missed. But this year, man, they're on fire. I think the only two losses have been
two losses were the horrendous ending to their Colts game where they jumped over the center and lost because the Colts missed that game-winning field goal, and then the Colts ended up winning it anyway. And then I think their other loss was...
It was a close game.
It was the Chargers in a last-minute... touchdown from Justin Herbert.
So it's
won it so far.
So I mean, they're two close games against two tough opponents. So
yeah, two caliber playoff teams in the AFC. So
and the other one's the number one team in the NFL. So.
Right, exactly. Let's go to who's Benatti, and we're gonna go. I'll just go Andy Dalton. I'm not gonna harbor on it, but man, that. I thought the Panthers were going to look a little bit closer in that game, be closer to that Buffalo Bills team. But there's a reason one guy was Josh Allen, an MVP, in the way he played. And there's another reason Andy Dalton is no longer starting in the NFL, especially when he throws a pick right to a guy that's standing 2 feet in front of him, kicking the ball up and returning it to the one-yard line. I wouldn't say the Panthers were giving you the the A-OK in terms of how well that team was playing. Bills, though, I think that was a given spot where they were going to roll anyway, coming off the bye in two straight losses. Josh Allen, you want to know how many passes? They scored 40 points. You want to know how many passes Josh Allen threw yesterday?
Josh Allen passes?
Yeah.
30?
19.
19?
19 passes. That's all he needed to do. James Cook, just a massive game. 200-plus yards on the ground, two-touchdown game. Hasn't done some no, – a Bills player. He's first Bills player since Terry Miller in 1978 to rush for 200-plus yards and two touchdowns in a game. Other guys to do it, O.J. Simpson and Cookie Gilchrist. Yes, look for your Cookie Gilchrist rookie cards from 1963. Outside of that, just an efficient performance, but the Panthers were not in the league of the Buffalo Bills there on Sunday, so that's where we go there. Let's go to Who's Been Ice. Come on, you know I got to talk about my guy, Jorge. I got to talk about my guy, Drake May. Myles Garrett was a monster on Sunday. 5 sacks for Myles Garrett in a losing effort, and yet the Patriots stared that in the face and said, we're still going to drop 30 on you on the best defense of the National Football League. Statistically, I'm not objectively saying that. I'm saying statistically, Cleveland is the best defense of the National Football League, and yet the Patriots, you know, score an easy 30 on them in terms of that. I love the deep throws he's been making. Kayshon Boutte, again, is just back there on the backside of the defense. I don't know what teams are doing against the Patriots, but it's clearly not working. And I'm in a dangerous spot to think that Drake May could win MVP. He's third best odds in the Vegas odds right now. I think only behind like Mahomes and Allen. And there's a legit conversation around his ability, and I've seen some proclamations saying he's the best quarterback from the 24 draft class right now. That's including Jaden Daniels and what he did last year. We know Caleb Williams. I'll get to that in a second. Might be starting to fade his luster in terms of it. But Drake May playing very good football, 6-2.
I think there's a little bit bias there, but yeah, I'll take it.
I'm trying to sound as least biased as I can, Jorge. Come on.
Sure. Okay.
Do you like him?
I think he's good. Yeah, I think he's good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You're not gonna say anything more?
Do I have to?
You're on a radio show.
I think he's good, but he's got flaws, huh? How about that?
What are his flaws? What are his flaws?
No, I just think that sometimes he makes decisions where
he did also throw a point-blank pick in that game against the Browns. Luckily, the Browns have a kicker that can't pick footballs, so they did get lucky there.
He's learning.
Let's go to my last Benatti, and I mentioned it, the Bears. I was waiting for the shoe to drop on the Bears here. I knew this. I said this to our coworker Nico, who is a massive Bears fan. I told this to him. 4-2, man. That's how you started last year, and then Jaden Daniels did the thing. And he lose to Tyler Huntley in the Baltimore Ravens, who, you know, the Ravens look like a team coming out of a bye that actually kind of fixed a little bit of things. Their defense played a lot better, but Caleb Williams didn't give them any help in terms of that. Fewest points. Bears have scored the fewest points this season. Had scored this season in that game, 16 points. They had scored at least 20 in the first 6 games of the season so far. Really didn't know what Caleb was doing on the back end of that game in terms of trying to get them to score. In terms of it, 25 for 38, 285, 0 touchdowns, 1 INT, second straight game without passing a touchdown and throwing for at least 1 TD in the first 5 games of the year before that. So he's a little cold right now. We'll see if it can turn it around, but classic Bears loss. I was just waiting to say classic Bears, and there it is, the Bears losing to a 2-5 Baltimore team.
Yeah, I had faith in them at the beginning of the year, but that's gone.
You're already gone. See you later. I mean,
it is what it is.
It is what it is.
They might have a chance later on, but we'll see.
I don't know. Maybe their schedule is easier. I know the Niners got them late in the year in terms of it, but we'll see how it goes. And that's my Who's Been Naughty, Who's Been Nice of the weekend. Hey, before we go to commercial, Jorge, I just want to remind folks that YouTube TV customers, you could lose ESPN and the sports you love, including college football, College Game Day, Monday Night Football, which is happening tonight. You also got the NBA, college basketball, and more. Take action. Go to keepmynetworks.com to keep ESPN. Once again, go to keepmynetworks.com to keep ESPN on YouTube TV. So that's what you want to do if you want to keep having your programming, including tonight's game between the Commanders and the Chiefs. All right, Jorge, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up hour number one next on 1430 ESPN. All right, welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Wrapping up this first hour, we got another hour coming up. By the way, reminder over on 790, Jorge, there's a little thing called the World Series going on over there, right?
10 more minutes.
In the pregame will start between Blue Jays and Dodgers for that. I'll give a little bit of a preview of what our schedule looks like here coming up. But, Jorge, let's do like 4 good minutes on the 49ers real quick. Knew it was a frustrating one to come into with that game in terms of that. Could have been a frustrating game. Felt a little trap game-esque with the D'Amico Ryans factor in terms of it. Team is... Let's be fair. It's felt like Neo dodging bullets in the Matrix a little bit, right?
I don't know why the whole entire game I just felt like they knew our plays. Like they knew what we were going to do right before we did it. And it, especially in offense where we try to go at them different ways and they just had our number. Especially all throughout the first half. Second half was a little different. They changed a few things and... the Niners got a little bit more more aggressive, I want to say. But
do you want to hear something alarming?
Go for it.
CJ Stroud was 30 for 39 for 318 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 INT. While that was his 9th career 300-yard passing game, Jorge, that was his first in the last 20 games he has started passing for 300 yards plus in a football game.
Yeah, this season he hasn't been quite as good as he was last season.
I don't even think last season he was great.
His first year, wasn't it?
His rookie year was great. The last couple of years he's been mediocre.
But our second, like the Niners secondary was just not it. And no matter how much they tried it, they were a step behind going over the players that they were supposed to cover, and they just look awful.
Yep.
And that just played into the hands of the Texans that, you know, we're looking to get a win because their season has been horrible so far. 'Cause
what do you do, though? Like, to me, the Niners' defense, like, we know it's coming back on the offensive side. I don't know what more you can kind of wait for to come back on the defensive side to help.
Like, and the thing was that every time there was pressure on the quarterback, he was free to throw the ball.
Yeah.
And he would throw the ball 10, 20 yards, 15. And you were like, well, I can't, you know, rush him.
Yeah.
And because he's going to throw the ball far. And that's why when they got to the red zone, they were able to stop them. Because he wasn't able to, you know, find himself, get more room. The wide receivers didn't have that much room anymore. But I just feel like the rush was a little bit slow, too. And give credit to them. They cover the... You know, their wide receivers did well.
76.9% completion for Stroud. That's his third highest completion in a game percentage-wise for his career. Minimum 10 attempts. You can pop the champagne, though, Jorge. For one thing, on the defense, though, you finally get it. You finally get your first interception of the year.
And he didn't go out of bounds.
The Amador Lenoir.
He didn't go out of bounds. If he would have gone out of bounds, they could have had a field goal, maybe.
14 straight games without an interception for the Niners dating back to last year. Yeah. That's astounding. Niners have not been able to force turnovers in that form or fashion.
And that's the secondary. Mm-hmm. The secondary problem.
And while I like the secondary, I like the pieces here and there, it's not a secondary that I can trust still. Like, I think there's foundational opportunities for this defense to be better moving forward long term, but the short term is you're a team that feels like it's capable of contending for playoffs, Super Bowl, all that great stuff, especially when the offensive pieces come back. But I just think there's a trade here or there potential. I think there's still a defensive side trade that has to happen for this team moving forward. So we'll have to pay attention to that moving forward. There's a week left.
Miles Garrett, maybe?
Ah, he just signed the big deal. No chance. He just signed the massive extension.
But imagine.
Logan Wilson's a name that he requested a trade from the Bengals. He's a middle linebacker. He's played in a Super Bowl before, went on that run with the Bengals. That's a name I think about. Logan Wilson.
Maybe. He's in a team that's going nowhere, and yeah.
He's requested a trade from Cincy. I don't know. That might be a guy. I covered Logan Wilson in Wyoming. Solid kid. He's a Wyoming born and bred kind of guy in terms of it. So always kind of rooting for him. So maybe that's he'd be a little more cheap than a Trey Hendrickson, maybe, from the Bengals side. So we'll see. All right, Jorge. We got another hour of our show. Reminder, we're taking up to Monday Night Football tonight. So we got me and Ed's Major Wager. So we'll do one more hour. CJ Haydock's going to join us soon as well. So stay with us. Behind the Bench rolls along here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader.
He's got the knowledge.
Because once again, I have to come on air and talk about how right I am once again in anything that it comes to sports.
He's got the questions.
I'm going to lose it. Are you kidding me? What are we doing here?
He's got the guess.
20th head coach in Fresno State history here, Matt. Is it hard to believe sometimes still the 20th head coach here in program history?
It's all moved really quickly here over the course of the last 5-6 weeks, but super excited to be here.
Phil Bonatti is the voice for the Central Valley sports leader. Behind the Bench starts now. Brought to you by Helena Agri.
That's right. Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader, here on this Monday, hour number two of our show before we send it off to Kansas City for the Commanders and the Chiefs tonight on 1430. Over on 790, pregame has started from Los Angeles between the Dodgers and the Blue Jays for Game 3 of the World Series, tied at one apiece. Hey, Jorge, one of the best holidays of the day today. Do you know what holiday I'm talking about?
Sports Equinox, right?
Sports Equinox. Happy Sports Equinox to those who celebrate all four teams, all four sports. Major? Major sports.
Five.
Soccer counting, too?
Yeah.
We're counting. MLS playoffs tonight, too?
Yeah.
Okay. Five. Okay. We'll go five. We'll count six even. Cricket out there too. Happy Sports Equinox to those who celebrate in terms of the NBA action tonight, in terms of the NHL action tonight. National Football League is tonight. The World Series is tonight. And yes, Jorge has mentioned it is the soccer
MLS playoffs
going on as well. So, Jorge, exciting time of the year. It's always October, usually, I believe. I think it can be October when it's the Sports Equinox, I believe. So it's a good time of year. Good time of year to talk about sports, right, in terms of it?
Yeah, there's like a day in like April or May where things start for like baseball.
There's no NFL, though.
Well, that's what I was going to go through.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I blew it. I blew it, Jorge. My bad.
I was going to say the only one that was missing was NFL.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, what would you do without me, Jorge? in terms of the day today, though. Dodgers, Blue Jays, let's talk a little World Series. And we'll bring in CJ Haydock here in the next 10 minutes or so. I hear him. He's hanging out there right now. Dodgers, Blue Jays, tied at one, series tied at one. Friday night, obviously, the Blue Jays with that big 9-run inning in the sixth to just absolutely – I can equally say demoralized at least two Dodger fans I know in my life that were sitting there next to me during the Friday Night Lights game, Jorge, because Pat and Paul were there. Excuse me. Oh man, I'm dealing with some hiccups.
They had a hard time. Yeah. I heard them, you know, at the beginning of this the game that you guys were on. They were kind of happy and, you know, going through it, and then all of a sudden it just
it dwindled into something that was less jovial, which was an 11-2 victory by the Blue Jays, Dodgers falling in that game and things turning in a different way. But then the Dodgers, of course, bouncing back Saturday. It was a blink and you'll miss it game, in my opinion. I was watching that game for a little bit and I was like, oh, this is gonna be another good classic one. I go and I actually went out again after the game on Saturday. I went to Backyard Social over in Old Town Clovis. Nice spot. Love that spot. I was like, I need some pizza. I want a little flatbread pizza from that place. And so got some pizza, and it was a blink, and suddenly Yamamoto was just finishing the game from a TV that was about 40 yards from me that I could only see from across the way. And I was like, oh, I guess the Dodgers won. And so I don't have much analysis from it, but I did feel vindicated in my analysis in terms of what would frustrate this Dodger pitching staff in terms of how pesky the Blue Jays are. The Blue Jays have certainly showcased that to the starting pitching so far from game one. Dodgers seem to solve it in game two. And so I'm curious to see what is going to be coming out of this in game three. Just a little reminder, teams that win game three have gone on to win the series 69% of the time, Jorge. 42-19 is the record of teams that win game three in the World Series in a best of seven. So critical game tonight, I would say. Absolutely critical game tonight. After two games in Toronto, who would you say you feel better about winning the World Series after those two games? It feels like two different games that we saw from game one and two.
Yeah, definitely. I think the Dodgers brought out their best, if not their second best pitcher on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's still up to me. Something in the air still. I feel like tonight, whoever wins tonight is gonna have an advantage.
Yeah,
big advantage. But it's a close going. It's a close one.
Max Scherzer pitching tonight. I didn't know this. I did not know this was. I thought there'd be more players like this under the circumstance. He is the first pitcher all time to start a World Series game with four different teams. I thought there'd be more guys out there like that, like a Roger Clemens style or somebody like that. But I guess
I think what it is that I feel like you're thinking about making the playoffs, not the World Series.
Yeah, the World Series. So Mad Max pitched in the 2012 World Series for the Tigers. He pitched in 2019 for the Nats and 2023 for the Rangers, and now 2025 for the Blue Jays. So 3.26 ERA with 19 Ks through 19 and a third inning pitched in his four World Series starts for Scherzer. At 41 years and 92 days old, he's the oldest pitcher to start a World Series game since Jamie Moyer did it in 2008 with the Phillies. The only pitcher to start and win a World Series game at age 41 and older is Kenny Rogers, when he pitched eight scoreless innings with two hits in 2006 against the St. Louis Cardinals. Only win the Tigers ever got in that World Series, by the way. So are we going to get some magic from the old guy tonight, Mad Max, who goes up against his former team? Yes, he did play for the Dodgers for a hot cup of coffee for a little bit. Or is tonight Tyler Glasnow's ability to get through it in terms of it? He's making his third career World Series start. He went... He would like things to go differently than when he last pitched in the World Series. Tyler Glasnow, two starts for the Rays back in 2020, or he went 0-2 with a 9.64 ERA in two starts against those Dodgers back then. So I give you all these stats, and I say, what do you make of it? Does it matter? do these stats matter in terms of the old wily vet versus the guy who at least looks better on paper but seems to be the guy who may have struggled in the stage so far?
Yeah, I think the stats matter. I think just because it's baseball, excuse me, I feel like if any other game, any other sport, stats matter here more because it feels like they're doing the same thing that they've done before, and you could, you know, predict something that's going to happen with that, the statistic.
Yeah.
More than, you know, that if you didn't have that. So I feel like you'd be more ready for it if you have that stuff.
What got Blake Snell in trouble is in terms of he needed swing and miss in his pitches, and the Blue Jays were not swinging and missing. Tyler Glass now, 42% miss rate this postseason. That means missing any sort of contact with the bat, second highest of any qualified pitcher behind Shohei Ohtani. Blue Jays have only whiffed on 21% of their swings, Jorge. They are the best in terms of getting the bat on the ball in any form or fashion. I think they were close to busting it with Yamamoto. I think they screwed up in the beginning of the game in terms of some squandered ability to get a few more runs across and maybe get to that Dodger bullpen. I chalk it up as I think the Dodgers have certainly at least benefited from how out of the world Yamamoto has been, but I don't know if I could be convinced that the offense for the Dodgers is certainly carrying the torch right now. And after two games, I still feel like the Blue Jays are better equipped to win this World Series based off of the way they play and based off of the way the Dodgers need to get outs. Quite simply, I don't know if the pitching is going to continue to stay for this Dodgers side. What I do need to preface is I think the Dodgers need to get their offense going and have a juggernaut kind of night in terms of their offensive production, which we just have not seen this entire postseason, Jorge. Let's be frank. The Dodgers haven't really killed a team this postseason. Like, I haven't seen, like, other than the Ohtani game four, go crazy, three homer game, when have the Dodgers really run away with a baseball game this year or in this postseason? I would be hard pressed to find something like that in terms of it. And are they going to do it tonight? Are they going to get to Scherzer tonight? I think it's a key opportunity for them to do so. I mean, especially you want to know why winning this game is big is because you got two games back to back after this game as well. And if you tire out a bullpen early in this game tonight, that's two straight games left where you got to like really stretch the team out in terms of a bullpen and their flexibility in terms of that. Getting to the starter early in this game is, I think, the most paramount thing to win this World Series because it determines what happens next in L.A. tomorrow and Wednesday. Jorge, would you agree?
Definitely, definitely. I think that, you know, you don't if you're the Blue Jays, you don't want to go to L.A., you know, one down, you know, because it's going to be harder for you to, especially in L.A. with all those people that are going to the game.
And yeah.
The atmosphere there is just, you know, different. So you want to take this game and have that already with you. If you're able to hit the ball first and, you know, get runs right away, that's one way to do it.
Yeah.
But, especially because LA's been struggling with their bullpen.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I just had this thought pop up in my head. I think about the NBA Finals, it's the best of seven. I think about the NHL Stanley Cup Finals, best of seven. And then I think about this World Series. Why are we just rushing through this World Series, Jorge? Like, why do we have two games, then a day off, then three games, then a day off, then two games? I understand baseball's built that way, but I feel like we should savor the series more a little bit, right? When we have game, day off, game, day off, game, you know, like how they kind of spread it out for the finals. The finals is about 2.5 weeks. I like that better. Like, really showcase the two teams. And I get it changes the math of the series in terms of the starters, but to me, I want the totality of who's the best team, not who's best set up because they won the first game of a three-game stretch here where they're going to have to, you know, stretch a bullpen here by game five. I don't know. I feel like that's not the right way to determine a champ.
It's the difference of sport.
Yeah.
You don't, after a basketball game, you want to rest.
Yeah.
You want to take a day, maybe two off, and and then come back and be 100% for the game. Baseball, it's not like that. Maybe it's
hot take. This is my hot take. We should prolong the World Series a little bit. Give some more rest. And so we have these teams more competing in a vacuum as opposed to circumstance of what happened the day before.
Maybe that's good for your pitchers, your starting pitchers. Yeah. But I don't know how good that is for your batters that are hot. They might lose it during those few days. That's why a lot of teams don't like, long – you layoffs like that because if they're hot and they're going through it and hey, let's keep going.
But both teams are doing the same thing. It's not like they are it's not like one team's getting an advantage over another
but if one team has a hot hitting streak, because you got to think about it, baseball whether you like it or not, it's a lot of mental head games going on through, and if they feel like they're on a hot streak, they don't want to end that. I don't want to stop
I just don't know if I like the three games in a row scenario. I just don't know if I like the three games in a row, especially when you win the – you know what I mean? Like, I just don't feel like that in a vacuum tells me who's the best team. But then again, I go to the flip side of my argument, and I say, well, that's how the baseball schedule usually goes. You play a series, and then you go on the road, and then you play a three-game set, and then you go on the road, and you wrap up in a different city.
Yeah, baseball is not as demanding on you as a regular player unless you're a pitcher, right? So you got, the guys that were on the pit field are probably going to be able to be on the field for the next 2-3 games before they need a rest or something.
Yeah.
So that's why, you do it like that. But, I like it. Within a week, you're done with baseball, and you see who's the winner at the end, and – I feel like it's good.
Okay.
Throwing out the idea. Two games in one week, so I am used to that. Too.
Yeah. I'm just throwing out the idea. Let's savor it a little bit more. I feel like baseball's rushing to the end of their season, but I get it. It's 162 games. Attention spans are rough. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to bring in C.J. Haydock, head coach of Fresno Pacific next, talking FPU basketball. They're going to be playing at Save Mart Center next week, and you can listen to it on 790. So we'll talk to the FPU head honcho next here on 1430 ESPN. All right, welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN, Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Good to have a guest in here today. C.J. Haydock is going to be joining us right here as I get his microphone turned on. There we go. C.J., check 1-2 for us here real quick.
Check 1-2. Thanks for having me, Phil. I appreciate it, man.
FPU men's basketball head coach here for us on the airwaves here on 1430. C.J., good to have you. Hope you're doing well. It's like the weeks before, Christmas. What is it? What is it like the before the real games get going for you guys? How are the weeks anticipating like that?
It's the best time of year.
Yeah.
Because if you lean into who you could be and your optimism and belief, which is what a good team does, you're just you're brimming with opportunity. So I got my matcha here because I decided a fourth coffee in a day was probably a bad idea. I'm highly caffeinated. It's so fun. If you're a hoop head, if you're an athlete, if you're a coach, spending all day, every day worried about how good can we be on November 3rd when the ball goes up.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing better in life. I think if you ask my wife, she would feel differently about my absentee fatherism, but the rest of it, we can be all in for an endeavor, is really cool. It's a sweet time of year, crisp air in that fall weather. So it's
absolutely
good.
Absolutely. And exciting because we're going to have, your guys game against Fresno State right here on 790, doubleheader, the women and the men going right at it against the Bulldogs. It's always great. I don't know if it's officially a tradition or how long this has been since Fresno State and FPU have kind of started the season.
Yeah.
Feels like it's been a while.
Yeah.
This has gone, talk about the relationship between the two programs and having a game like this here in the local area.
Yeah. So we played a couple times. I think the first time we played was under the prior coaching staff with Coach Hudson. We played 3 years in a row against them. Two of those 3 years we led at the last media timeout and then couldn't get it done, couldn't quite get over the hump.
Yeah.
Took last year off, really, really grateful to Coach Wahlberg. I think you know, Coach Wahlberg and I have had a really good relationship over the years. I've coached four of his players from Clovis West. Mm-hmm. You know, I think like that alignment, I think everybody needs to be behind Coach Wahlberg. Like,
yeah,
this is a guy who wants to do it for the city. And like, to be quite honest, this is a great opportunity for my guys to get a platform to showcase what Fresno basketball can be. I've got 9 Valley guys on my roster, and yeah, Vance doesn't have the privilege of that depth of talent being available for Mountain West, although he's got a couple.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really good showcase for us. It's a stage we'll embrace. And we're really grateful to Coach Wahlberg that he sees that vision, that he wants to play against us for the university's leadership, because it's good for our city to see those levels. To see what we offer, to see what he does. We're definitely fired up about it. There's no question.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be an exciting one in terms of that. And we're looking forward to showcasing it, like I said, right on our airwaves. And you guys, you know, momentum is certainly a thing. I don't know how much it is from year to year, but last year there was a lot of momentum, you know. Ripping off a lot of wins to the tail end of it in terms of that. You guys, you know, It was an interesting ride down the stretch, but you guys put together some good stuff there, and I'm hearing a lot of good stuff about building off of that, especially with a lot of guys who were there in that situation. So talk about maybe where FPU was coming into from last year into this year, and how's it turning out right now?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think what we tell everybody is the way the world turned in college athletics with the professionalization of Division I. We have something special to offer, because if you are nostalgic about college athletics and you like to see freshmen come of age, Chestnuts and Butler has everything you want, and our program has everything you want. So, I mean, I'll trot out a starting lineup on the third of 4 guys who have been in our program for a combined 12 years, who have played 300 games of college, have started 300 games of college basketball. I'll bring, you know, 3 or 4 freshmen off the bench that are from Fresno.
Mm-hmm.
We're fun to root for. We're what the Valley is supposed to be. And it's all over our branding. It's all over our gear for a reason. I'm Fresno through and through, and my program always will be. And so, you know, we ended last year. We've been young. We finally got old. We ended last year with, I think we won 10 of our last 12.
Yep.
We bring back our three leading scorers and a host of other experienced guys. I think we have 3 returners who could be all league guys. We have 2 transfers that could be all league guys. And then we have this deep, talented, we have 7 freshmen, and they all played basketball in the central section, down from Tulare Western to San Joaquin Memorial to Sanger. Like, we are the Valley. There's no question about it. And so, you know, I think like our culture's in an unbelievable place. We have people that, our fans can root for, and players that they can root for. So, you know, we got picked 2nd in our league in the preseason poll. We're undefeated in our closed door scrimmages so far. We feel like there's a lot of positive momentum, but we also are keenly aware that like, all of that is rented.
Yeah.
All of that is temporary, and the ball is going to go up against Fresno State on Monday night, and they don't care about preseason polls, and our guys are going to have to play against bigger, faster, stronger and figure it out. So we certainly have a lot of momentum going into our season. We certainly are thrilled about where our program is, but that is delicate and can go away at any moment, and we're going to make sure our team and everyone associated with our program knows that.
Well, it's not just the optimism from you, obviously. You know, you feel good about this team, but in the preseason polls, and I don't know how much you pay attention to it, but I think a lot of people can recognize that being a team that's currently tied for 2nd in the preseason polls in the PacWest, you know, Point Loma's up there, but you guys are tied with Hawaii Hilo. You even have a first place vote out there for you guys. There's a lot of respect, a lot of people recognizing that you guys are set up this year to do something potentially special for this program.
No question. I think like I said, I think our culture forgot about the value of continuity, and our coaches in our league didn't forget about it. And, you know, I coach my team, and there's a lot of smiles and laughter and familiarity, and a really pissed off when we lose a drill in practice. And we know what it looks like to be successful. We know what the habits look like. We know that there has to be laughter, and there has to be this burning fire of competitiveness. Mm-hmm. And when I look at my team, I see that. You know, I think like this is my 10th year at FPU. I think in 9 seasons, 7 of those seasons, we've outperformed where we were picked in the poll. One of those teams was picked really highly and underperformed. Mm-hmm. And so when we got word of the preseason poll, that's how we attacked it with our team. Like, you can be these teams, and this is what made them, their toughness, their togetherness, or we can be these underperforming teams who actually were as talented or more talented than our current group. So we'll try to hammer that home. We have mature guys in our locker room. We have a returning all-league point guard in Isaac Peralta. Our junior captain, Seth Brown, has been unbelievable in his leadership this fall. And so we will try to lean into that and understand that none of that goes anywhere. We can be anything we want on paper, and until the ball goes up, it doesn't matter.
Do you sit there for you as a coach, and like when you know the expectations are high, does it tighten the collar a little bit sometimes when the expectations, and you know teams are coming in with their best as a coach, you and your staff know they got to be buttoned up and ready for each game that comes?
Yeah, I think being hunted is definitely a different experience, and I'll be honest, it's a new experience. Second is the highest we've ever been picked in a preseason poll, and in 2021 and 21-22, mm-hmm. we were top 25 in the country.
Yeah,
and this is the highest we've ever been picked, and so we play. We're really proud of, like, I'm wearing a shirt that says the Fresno Way.
Yeah.
We're really proud of being like an underdog, underappreciated. Actually, this morning I talked to my mother on the phone, who's the number one Sunbirds fan. Shout out Cynthia. And she said, "What are you going to tell your team? Like, you play that underdog card really well. And if you want to represent Fresno, multiples of our jerseys just say Fresno across their chest. We roll up to games in a 559 hoodie. Like, if you want to represent Fresno, you want to be underappreciated." Mm-hmm. I hear the guys in our league who are coaches from San Diego and LA and Honolulu and San Francisco. That's the markets we recruit against. I hear the way they talk about our city, and I take it personal. And so I think like we're going to try to maintain that chip and that edge of the level of like disrespect, because I think it's emblematic of our city. Mm-hmm. We live in an unbelievable city with all kinds of strengths that gets dumped on for no reason. And so we're really, really happy to accept that battle. Getting picked second doesn't make it any different in terms of, nah, like we better be blue collar like our city is. We better be the hardest working like our city is. We better be diverse. We better be about first thing staying first. We better be all of those things. Luckily, it's ingrained enough in us that I don't think a single poll takes that away. Mm-hmm. But I would say I will make sure it doesn't take it away.
I want to ask just on the factor of just, you know, how much of a messaging is involved with, you know, this being the last time you guys are in the PacWest, right, as a competitor, and maybe wanting to take that trophy and run away with it.
Yeah.
Nobody can take it from you because you don't have the next year to do that. You have the CCAA coming in terms of that. Is there a mentality there of knowing, hey, we can be undisputed for the rest of our lives in terms of the PacWest champion if we win it this year? Is there something to that as well?
Definitely. It's in my pocket. It hasn't come out to my team yet, so it's the first they're going to hear it, but it's great. No, I think so. Like, the PacWest has been unbelievable to us. I think the CC2A move for us is going to be unbelievable, higher level of competition, conference branding, and all kinds of additives for our university that they just outrun the PacWest in. But you know, we are keenly aware that we're on our way out, that every experience we have this year will be our last. Mm-hmm. We'll take our last Hawaii trip. We'll play on the floor at Point Loma when they're ranked top 10 in the country, which they inevitably will be, and it'll be our last chance to do that. So we're going to be pretty cognizant of that. We haven't loaded that with our team yet.
Yeah.
But it's coming for sure, and it's definitely a little bit of an incentive that's fun for us. You know, I've been in the league 10 years, and while the thought of new experiences is certainly enjoyable, there's definitely a level of nostalgia for all of us that have been long-term in terms of what it means now.
What is PacWest basketball? Like, what is it different team to team? Or, like, what is the – like, when people go and watch you guys play and watch the way the opponents come in and attack, like, what is that style of basketball for people who aren't aware?
Elite question. It's a basketball purist's heaven. We call the PacWest the cute league, and the CC2A the bruiser league. So it is like incredible level of basketball IQ. If I had to compare it to a D1 conference, I'd compare it to the WCC. A lot of private institutions, lot of skilled talent, not a ton of big time athletes, although they exist in certain ways, but incredible level of coaching, incredible level of IQ and sophistication. In my 10 years, I think we have 12 or 13 guys who have gone on to play professionally. And they rave about the level of challenge in the league in terms of scheme and IQ and identifying the game. Mm-hmm. And these are guys that are playing professionally overseas all over just because the mass number of hours you have in practice in Division II is at a high level. I actually had one of my guys who plays professional in Australia tell me, "Coach, I don't think I'll ever get to a level of defensive sophistication that I saw in our league night in and night out again in my life, in my career." And he's going to play another 10 years. And so, it's that. And then, you know, it's old school college athletics. It's guys who will bleed and sweat and cry and laugh for the jersey. It's very few dudes who have any NIL money. It's a purity of the game. If you ask me, who's, you know, elder millennial, it's what college basketball was and should be.
Yeah.
And so people who get fed up with the professionalization of college sports, you know, in D2, we've always been at a resource deficiency. We kind of laugh, us D2 coaches, like Division I coaches cry about NIL money. And we're like, hey, at our level, like nobody has the same scholarshiping. And we just say, hey, we got figured out. That's my job as a coach. So we just are kind of a no holds barred. Like, nah, man, other people have more than us. And we're from Fresno. We're going to figure that out. So,
yeah. You mentioned some excitement in terms of some of the new fresher faces that are coming in as well. There's a name obviously from here. Logan Kilbert is the one I hear about a lot from what he's been able to do as a basketball player. I think one of the highest scorers ever in high school ever in terms of that. And now he comes in from Weber, you know, having him back in town specifically, I think a lot of people are excited. You mentioned a lot of, what, we got 9 Central Valley student athletes in terms of it. I don't know what that compares to numbers in the past before. Yep. Do you feel like, first of all, is that a high number for you guys, or is that right where you want it to be, or in terms of that?
We'd like to be about 50% of our local guys. We usually have to go find our height elsewhere.
Yeah.
Valley's not rich with height.
Hey, you gotta,
9 is about right. We'd like to be at about half. Logan's a great example. Really talented player.
Yeah.
Had 14 and 10 in our scrimmage yesterday. Going to be an impact guy for us. Shoots it. You know what's really cool about this is I have three – hope I don't miss anyone – I have 3 local freshmen whose dads are like OG Fresno basketball coaches.
Uh-huh.
So Logan Kilbert and Dan Kilbert, who's a junior college coach at Reedley College.
Yep.
Lucas Jones, whose dad, John Jones, was a legendary coach at Clovis High, an assistant at Clovis North, and one best underrated coaches around. And then Abram Potts, whose dad, Mike Potts, was a really good player back in the day and has done all kinds of stuff in our city with Fresno Wildcats for the youth and in the AAU side. So I will tell you, I want more coaches' kids because those guys are so great to coach. They're unbelievable. So Logan will make an impact right away. Lucas will make an impact right away. Abe's got a chance to be a really good player for us. You know, and then we go down the line, we have some other guys from Sanger and those things. But those three, I think, are the closest to being impact guys from the Valley day one. And we're pretty excited about them. They're also guys that you can just put in front and be like, nah, this is Fresno's best. Mm-hmm. This kid handles his business in the classroom. He's well-spoken. He's a leader.
Yeah.
He's articulate. We have not only the best players from Fresno, we have the best dudes from Fresno. And that's the whole mission of FPU, is to give those guys a stage and a spotlight.
What about the guys who aren't from specifically Fresno? You mentioned the Fresno way and them adopting, you know, even from as near as Sanger. You got, I love watching Malachi Fisher last year play. We did a game of his at Tulare.
He's so talented. He doesn't know how good he's going to be.
All the way to the guys who are from Australia, you know, to adopt the Fresno way. What does that take for them to understand what you mean when you when you're wearing the shirt and that? Does it take the season? Does it take the off season? Like, how does it take for them to you know, lock into what you mean in terms of that?
Phenomenal question. Me raving like a lunatic. I mean, I think like I have a huge staff. I have a bunch of Fresno locals on my staff. I think we want to expose them to, first of all, we lead with it.
Mm-hmm.
We have no interest in a dog and pony show in recruiting.
Yeah.
We have an interest in, this is what you're signing up for. And it's real and we'll live up to it every day. It's not for everybody and it's freaking hard. We're pretty honest and open about that. And we lose more recruits than we gain because of it. But it's why we have retention. It's why we have continuity. Because if we've done anything well in my 10 years, we know who we are. So when you live it and you breathe it and you drag it out of them, it looks a lot of ways. Our guys go to class. I mean, I think our team GPA in the spring was a 3.55.
Yeah.
I'd like to see a men's basketball team anywhere in the country. You can find me that's not an elite academic institution with that GPA. That's the expectation and the standard. That's the Fresno way. There's a level of play. A couple years ago, one of my assistants at halftime told our team, like, yeah, you guys are playing hard. You're not playing Fresno hard.
Mm-hmm.
So it's laced into our language. We work really hard in community service. In my 10 years, we're over 4,000 hours of community service in our city. You want guys to represent your city? Take them out to all the diverse neighborhoods. Take them to the Provarillo House and let them serve. Partner up with SynCal Sports and work with the nonprofit sports sector, right? Partner up with every neighborhood partnership and serve at their banquet with all these rules. Like, that's how you're going to find what it means to be from Fresno. And then two, we joke every day about our out-of-town guys. when do you get your 559 tattoo? Are you one of us yet? It's just laced into it. I'm not ashamed to say, like, we have a cult and that's what we are. I'm a very proud cult leader and I'm really proud of, like, that language for our city. So it looks all those ways.
Yeah.
And it starts from beginning to end, and there has to be a faithfulness to it, and there has to be love rooted in it, and there has to be a little bit of this is hard.
Yeah.
It has to be all those things.
In terms of the basketball element of it, I asked this question, you know, what allows a player to crack a CJ Haydock rotation? Like, what are the things you look for out of a player to get the minutes that they're looking for so they can play on the floor?
Yeah, great question. I think one of the things that we have tried to evolve in over the years, that I need to evolve in, I'm a grimy, grindy defense first coach. And sometimes that's been to the detriment of my teams. Nah, you can't guard, you can't get on the floor. And so that's not always the best metric to be sold out to. You got to be multifaceted. We this year we play fast and up tempo. We shoot it a bunch. Monday at the Samar Center, there's going to be a lot of points scored because it's going to be Fresno basketball through and through. Both of us chucking that thing up there and trying to pressure each other. It's going to be a great time. But, you know, I think, like, the underrated things that guys don't know is when you get to college – the team that makes the least mistakes wins. Mm-hmm. The team that has the best sense of self. You know, we talked about Lucas Jones and Logan Kilbert earlier. They have never played a Division II basketball game. And on the other end of the spectrum, I got, you know, a starting lineup with 300 games combined.
Yeah.
They have an elite sense of self. They know exactly what they do well. They're never going to be in the wrong spot, coaches, kids.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, their value outkicks their talent. That's the stuff we really hunt. We had our tip-off dinner a week and a half ago, and every year we give out a Distinguished Alumni Award.
Yeah.
This year's was a guy named AJ Kirby who played for us for six years. Shout out COVID for giving us 6 years, guys. Mm. Who's now an LA Fire Department firefighter, so we thought it was an appropriate year to honor him.
Yeah.
In prepping for that banquet to give him the award, AJ went away as the winningest player in the NCAA history of Fresno Pacific. He averaged 2.3 points per game, but he was in the right spot.
Yeah.
He was an all-league caliber defender. So we love talent. Of course, I want to win. That metric changes. But, like, what we value are guys who are team first, who are high IQ. We're not shy about the fact we are purposefully complex. Mm-hmm. We are okay losing games early in the project so that later in the project, instead of finishing third, we can compete for league titles. And so we're purposely trying to build with the long lens in mind. And as a result, there's specific things we value.
Last question, because we're running out of time here. You know, when it comes to the game on Monday, and of course, how you want to start that off. Of course, you mentioned to me, this is one game on Monday and then a little bit of a break before you really get going into this. So in terms of what you want out of your team, what do you want the most out of your team from Monday's game?
Mm, great question. I would be lying if I said the stage didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And I will acknowledge that to my team. And I'll follow it up with also the stage is not the most important thing.
Yeah.
They deserve that stage. Our guys deserve that platform. We go underappreciated at Fresno Pacific all the time. All the time across the athletic board. So we are certainly grateful to the stage. But at the end of the day, our whole deal is built on the process and what it takes to be successful. So we will walk in. We don't set goals as a team for the year. We set commitments weekly. Mm-hmm. We talk about being the best version of ourselves. We talk about moving our program together in toughness and togetherness.
Yeah.
When we get to Monday, nobody can get better talent-wise. So talent is what we are. That was taken care of in summer and fall workouts. Can we be a little tougher possession to possession? Can we be a little more together possession to possession? And all the things that come with that. Being disciplined about your box outs. Mm-hmm. 2 foot rate paint touches. Ball movement and making the extra pass. Your culture and your response to mistakes. We will get dunked on at some point by one of the Bulldogs. We will turn it over. They will go on a stretch. And how does my team respond to those things? Because when you build elite, can I be better than the last 5 minutes and better than the last 5 minutes, and you let go of the outcome, then that's when you get the most success. And, you know, we tell our guys all the time, like, if you let go of the outcome will immeasurably increase your likelihood of achieving that outcome. So continuing to do that, let's not get caught up in a stage. I'll certainly applaud my guys. We will enjoy it. We will laugh and joke in huddles. We will have a great time. We will compete very hard. But at the end of the day, over those 40 minutes, did we prep for when the ball goes up against our Division II opponents? Did we move it closer to living up to where we've been picked in preseason polls? That's the messaging. Enjoy the platform. But also, guys, let's get better, just like we did on a Monday night in skill work and shell defense. It's the same message.
Well, we can't wait for it, and we are looking forward to that game and many more, and I'm sure we'll be covering it through the FPU Sunburst Sports Show, which you'll be hopping on at some point with Paul
this
throughout the season. So there you go. So it should be fun to follow the season as we roll along. CJ, appreciate you taking the time as always, and best of luck for the Firebirds this year.
Love it. Appreciate it, Phil.
Appreciate it. We'll take a quick break. We'll wrap up the show next on 1430 ESPN. Welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN, Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Feels like against the law for me to bring it down like that on that intro. I should have let it go a little bit longer, but Jorge, a minute scared me in terms of how long that intro was. So I was like, we only got a little bit of time left. So anyways, by the way, hey, YouTube TV customers, yeah, I'm talking to you. You could lose ESPN and the sports you love, including college football, college game day, how about Monday Night Football, NBA, college basketball, and more. You got to take action if you don't want to lose those. Go to keepmynetworks.com to keep ESPN. All right, so there you go. YouTube TV customers, we're talking to you. Jorge, you haven't finalized the schedule, but another reminder, we've got a World Series Game 3 tonight over on 790. That pregame's still going right now. And then we, of course, the first pitch starting in about 10-ish minutes, a little over, let's say 15 minutes or now from now. And then, of course, over on 1430 right now, here, Commanders and Chiefs. Let's do a little daily spread brought to you by Chicchancy Gold Resort and Casino. The daily spread brought to you by Chicchancy. If you're not trying your luck with your teams, try your luck with Chicchancy Gold Resort and Casino. Jorge, could you venture a guess without Jaden Daniels tonight for the Washington Commanders? Can you guess what the line is between the Commanders and the Chiefs tonight?
Ooh, I want to say like around double digits.
10.5. Commanders are a 10.5.
I was going to say 12.
Underdog.
12-11, but yeah, 10.5 seems right.
Can I point something out for you here, though?
Go for it.
I think the Commanders' offense has been better without Jaden Daniels. Is that a hot – I think – and I'm just going to point this out statistically here for you, Jorge, in terms of that. Jaden Daniels, who has been the quarterback for the Commanders for a few games this year, here's your offensive output by points based off of the Commanders the last few weeks. 21, 18, 27, 24, and 22. Not too horrible, but when Mariota was in at quarterback for the Commanders, how about 41 points and 27 against the Falcons? So a much better average in terms of that. They run the ball better when Mariota's in. I'm not suggesting an upset tonight because I do believe the Chiefs will win, but I am suggesting that I think this is closer than people think because the running quarterback has been an issue for the Kansas City Chiefs this year. I will warn you in terms of how they played their last Monday night game. Trevor Lawrence gave them a lot of issues in terms of like 3rd and 5, 3rd and 7 situations, and Lawrence would get out and scramble. And the Chiefs haven't really had an answer for that. The other loss for the Chiefs, Jalen Hurts, he can run, and he's been able to scramble in that game as well. You want to know how the Chiefs lost to the Chargers? Remember, Jorge? It was Justin Herbert that was able to scramble out of a big 3rd and long situation to win the game. He was very efficient on the ground in terms of that. Running quarterbacks have given the Chiefs fits in terms of that. And by the way, the Ravens, game doesn't count because Lamar Jackson went out with an injury midway through that game. So I'm just putting it on alert that I think there is a chance Chiefs could have some issues with Mariota, the run game, and all of that. So that's my evaluation. But I will say, I think the Chiefs win. I don't think I would take the points here, Jorge. I think it's a 7-point win for the Chiefs with a backdoor cover. Like what the people in Vegas, they call a hook, where the Commanders will be down 14. They get a late garbage time touchdown to keep it within 7. I think that's what it is. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Commanders make this a really interesting ballgame.
I don't know if it'll come down to that. I think that I think that lately the Chiefs have been, you know, doing what they've been doing for 5 years, what seems like 6 years now.
Mm-hmm.
But
7 years. Yeah.
7 years.
It's 2018.
So, the Commanders without Daniels, I don't know, sometimes it feels like it's good and sometimes it feels like Mariota is just going out there to see what so
now,
you know,
to preface,
in the air, seeing if somebody's out there.
To preface, Mariota did score 41 points, the most the output the offense ever had this season, and that was against the Raiders. So I don't know if I can totally 100% give it to them. The other game he played, it was a loss to the Falcons, 34-27. But I'm just pointing it out. In my mind, I think the Commanders have struggled mostly on offense this year. It's not been pretty sunshine and rainbows for this Washington Commanders offense. In terms of it, I mean, barely scoring 21 against the Giants. The Packers were the Packers in that Thursday night game. They beat the Chargers, but it wasn't like a massive, like the defense showed up. I don't know what the hell they were doing against the Bears 2 weeks ago in terms of that game. And then the Cowboys just absolutely wrecking them. No other way to say it. So I like to think it'll be close tonight. I'm picking the Chiefs.
I'm picking the Chiefs too, but I do think it's going to be 10 points though.
Yeah, I do think it could be closer. I would take the points there from the Washington standpoint. Or it could be a 34-3 blowout win for the Chiefs tonight.
Somewhere around there.
Well, we got some time. You got a World Series prediction? Who's winning game 3 tonight for the Blue Jays or the Dodgers?
I'm going Blue Jays because they're at home. And I think they're
in L.A.
Are they back in the league? So it's 2-2?
They've been in Toronto the first two games, Jorge.
I don't know why I was thinking it was 3 in Toronto.
No. There's two games out in Toronto. They're in L.A. for the first time and only
two. You know, I just wrote that on the schedule, too, that they were in L.A.
Oh, so. Jorge. Come on. Jorge.
But,
does it change your opinion? The Dodgers win tonight.
No.
I think the
Blue Jays have it.
I have Blue Jays in 7. I think if the Blue Jays are going to win long-term in this series, this is the game they win tonight.
Yeah.
I think the Dodgers win game 4. I think the Blue Jays win game 5. I think the Dodgers win game 6. And then I think the Blue Jays win game 7. I think we're going to get one of those World Series, the back and forths. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Blue Jays
should be fun tonight. Fun night of sports for sure. Sports Equinox. We got to love it, right? We got to love it.
It's already happening. It's already started.
It's everywhere. My Bruins are starting to play. I don't know. Sharks played an amazing game last day, by the way. Didn't even get to that. All right, Jorge. We'll be back tomorrow, 3-4. See you then, right?
Great show.
See you then.